Well, hi there. This is Reanimated, the podcast about zombies. My name is Stuart. Coming at you from a foggy Northern California. And joining me from New York area code of Brooklyn is AJ Conrad. Hello.
Hello, hello. How are you, Stuart?
I'm super great. Thank you for asking. I hope that you are also super great. And to those listening, I bid you super greatness, if it's within your power. We are talking today about The Ones Who Live, episode 4, which is entitled What We. What We. What's the meta? What We Become. There we go. It's the next one's going to be Become. So What We? This is the, as we kind of figured, this is the Michonne takes Rick out behind the woodshed and beats him up episode. But before we can get to it, we need to talk about some news. There's not a ton, but what there is kind of intriguing, wouldn't you say, H.A. Conrad?
And mysterious, at least the first item. So there have been sort of like teasers about a season 6 of Z Nation, which is, you know, awesome, but also like the teasing part is very much ambiguous about what exactly this would be. Could it be a reboot? Could it be a prequel? Could it be just a standalone something, you know, whatever it might be. So I have more questions than answers after sort of reading this. What do you think?
So this article is in Bloody Disgusting, if you want to go find it. And really, they're taking it from a Twitter post from The Asylum, the production company, I assume, that did Z Nation. And they just write, "Sorry, folks, we took a brief break, but now that we're back, ellipsis, hashtag Z Nation." And then there's a photo or an image from, I don't know what season of the show. I think it had five seasons. And it just says it's the Z Nation logo, an announcement soon.
Yeah,
this was on March 11th.
Again, it's pretty mean. If it was April Fool's Day, I would kind of think that's what it was.
Well, this is at least more legit than any of that stuff we were seeing about Black Summer. Though, yeah. You know, Bloody Disgusting draws the link that Black Summer and Z Nation were related, but they also immediately say it doesn't sound like we're getting a third season of that show. I am intrigued. Was I a huge fan of Z Nation? Clearly we weren't on this show. We only reviewed, what was it, like one season or even half a season?
Yeah, we didn't make it too far. But I could be convinced to watch more of it, especially after enjoying Black Summer so much. Though I did feel like Black Summer was a different tone.
It was a different genre almost. Yeah. Like, yeah. The fact that they, like, you know, they promoted Z Nation with Harold Perrineau, and I think we were both really excited about that guy being the lead, and then he was killed in the first episode, and then the next guy who was the lead was also, I feel like, killed in the first 5 episodes. Yeah, and I was just like,
not a good track record.
I'm all for killing off important members of the cast, but that just felt like a 1-2 punch that was really hard for me to get past. And then some of the more goofy elements of the show were like the zombie twister and things like that. They were a little tough to chew. Either way, though, would I be excited for Z Nation getting another shot? I would be excited for the show. Like having another zombie show on TV, I don't think is ever a bad thing. Is it the one for me? Maybe not, but I wouldn't hate on it.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that there's a lot of questions with this. So I know that some of the writers and the producers of the original series were suing for residuals, and maybe that got resolved. But wondering what this would look like if it were to come back. Is it just going to be an entire reboot, or is it this going to be a continuation? Is it going to be an entirely new cast? There's many possibilities here. I will say the whole post is like, major announcement soon. And so we'll see what happens. Again, I'm going to give myself some, you know, slack here and not be too excited until it actually comes out. But good on them for getting everybody all riled up, because everybody is very much riled up. So more to come on that as this mystery unfolds.
Indeed.
And I think you found
Yeah,
That
there's
new.
just another a new trailer, a gameplay trailer is out for this side scroller, very ambient side scroller called Into the Dead, Our Darkest Days. We have talked about it before on the show, but it had been, I don't know, about a year or so. And now there's a new trailer, which means, hey, guess what? That means development is probably still going on this game, and that's always positive. Is this game gonna be my bread and butter or my cup of tea? I'm not sure. I don't really love side scrollers. I know that they've had a real heyday and then another heyday. They seem like the gift that keeps on giving. People like to play them. It's just not really my thing. But would it be cool to have an immersive zombie side scroller? Sure. And would I probably give it a chance? I probably would have to because this gameplay trailer, if you haven't seen it, check it out. You can just Google or YouTube search for Into the Dead, Our Darkest Days, and you'll find it. Or if you're on the R Zombies subreddit, it was promoted there too. No, worth a look, worth a look. And that's about all there is about that. I don't think that there was a release date in the trailer, but I assume it's coming this year if they're putting out gameplay. And then finally, are you going to the movies soon, AJ?
Well, it depends on where it's playing. I'm assuming that there will be somewhere in New York that this will play, but there was an announcement that in US and Canada, theaters, drive-ins, and potentially some malls, specifically the Monroeville Mall in Pennsylvania, there will be a theatrical re-release of Dawn of the Dead to commemorate its 45th anniversary. So that would be pretty cool. I'm kind of hoping that so the either Alamo Drafthouse or Nighthawk theaters here in New York, I suspect if they do get to like play this, they'd probably put some other things around it, like maybe some of the other films, as they often do, which could be pretty cool. So I'm going to check it out and see where it's going to be playing. But there's like, definitely kind of like single showings. It looks like in April and some in May, depending on where you are. And also, how many drive-ins are actually out there anymore? I know of a couple. Do you have any out in California near you?
I'm not aware of any locally. I think there probably are some, but I mean, it's a perfect place to have a drive-in, a drive-through, drive-in. What's it called?
Drive-in.
Drive-in, drive-through. We got drive-throughs like everywhere, but drive-ins. I don't think we do that I know about. It's not only in drive-ins though, right? Or is it? Okay. Theaters, drive-ins, and malls. Yeah.
And it looks like both at Nighthawk and at Alamo Drafthouse in Brooklyn. So
Yeah, it's cool.
I have to figure out where I'm going to see this.
The only California, single showings. There's one in SLO in San Luis Obispo, which is like between Central and Southern California. Not a lot. There's LA. Oh, there's San Francisco Alamo Drafthouse, but that's an hour plus away from me. So probably not gonna make it to a theater for this one.
That said, I will try my luck and see what happens.
Yeah, to show the reanimated seal of approval by trying to get to a performance, AJ. That'll be cool.
But it's also like I think it's like a Tuesday night or
April
something.
12th.
No, when is it? Yeah, it's a Friday. It's a Friday. So maybe that's workable. Potentially workable. To
You
be
can do
continued.
it.
Stay tuned. So I hope everybody is able to check it out if they can. And I guess next up we're going to be talking about this very important, this very special episode of The Ones Who Live.
It is special
It
in its
is.
way.
So yes, it is. But yeah. So Rick and Michonne, this is definitely a different episode because Danai Gurira was the writer and I think the director or partial director of this particular episode. It's a whole
Gimple
show.
says she was show running it. And she mentions in the post show that she was like telling telling people that the props needed to look different and different. I think she was a little more hands-on than usual,
Right.
which
And you
is
know what?
good for her.
It totally makes sense because this is a pretty pivotal episode, and it's honestly, I think, the reckoning we've all been waiting for. to some extent.
I mean, also, are we surprised that Danai Gurira would when they're breaking these episodes, she would look at this one and be like, I'm writing that one. That's mine.
No.
I think
And
that's awesome.
I think it's awesome. And honestly, I think she did an amazing job with it. I thought it was really excellent. So I enjoyed watching this whole thing unfold. It was very satisfying.
Do you enjoy watching other people's therapy sessions? That's kind of
Well, okay, so here's the thing, and this is the thing that was driving me honestly just to distraction in this whole season. And as you know, these are the things that I really dislike because, you know, you have people in this incredibly stressful and horrible situation. We had the reunion between Michonne and Rick. And, you know, we all know certain things that's happening in with Rick because we know as the audience what's been going on. However, there seems to be a block in being able to share that with a character that you care about the most, and meaning Michonne. And I found that incredibly frustrating and just a little bit annoying. So this
Well, yeah, as an audience member, we're like, put your cards on the table so we can start solving the problems. Like that was kind of the only thing that was in the way of them.
And
And so it had to happen though. These conversations had to happen. Also, why Rick was being so recalcitrant, you know, like we needed to know what his major malfunction was, and it finally kind of comes out.
so I did find that to be incredibly satisfying here, and I thought that they did it in a really believable and good way. You know, I think both characters have been through a lot of trauma, but Rick specifically has been through trauma on multiple levels. And this uncovered so much of that, and I really thought it was well done. And I think it revealed even more that the audience wasn't necessarily aware of, although probably suspected, about, you know, his reluctance to leave the CRM. And so I really thought that this was, you know, just really a very cool way of doing it. And also, like, the sort of setting of all of this was really interesting, if a little unlikely, but still kind of fun. And so, you know, the opening, just even the opening, there's the cold open of them being pulled out of Michonne pulling them out of the helicopter, but they keep kind of like flashing back to that moment. And they end up in this kind of what was a forward-thinking community. Again, this I do have some questions here because it seems as if they had some sustainable idea that may have worked better than, say, what the CRM is doing, but maybe no food. I don't know. They just seem to have like some things figured out in a way that even it seems like the CRM has not figured out yet. But
Yeah, they had Roomba, which
It's
was its own, that was like
power.
the third named character in this episode, fourth if you count Lakshmi. It was like cool sort of like futuristic community that, you know, if you think back to 2010, this would have been some cutting edge stuff like smart homes, but it was just on the cusp.
And they were off the grid, so they weren't part of like it was their own self-sustained power, whatever that was being taken from, which they don't get into. Of course, that's what I
No.
want to know. You and I
Yeah,
always,
you're like, how is this still working?
you and I want to know all the nerdy details, and we never got them, except from that one French film.
It's funny that they run into that apartment because you realize later that it's like not on the first floor. It's like way up there in the building, apparently, because they talk about how they can't jump out the windows or whatever because they're too high up.
And they are. You see this later, how high up they
Yeah.
are.
And you're in as they're like as the episode unfolds, they're like working on trying to get down from where they've found themselves. This just feels like a strange place for them to run into, all a flutter at the beginning of the episode,
Well,
but.
it does, and again, they kind of go back to the graphic novel roots, the way they're even showing this sort of progression into how they get into the apartment. It's like these scenes, these like most imagine as like panels in a graphic novel, you know, the sort of like focus on about to jump out the helicopter. There's like sort of a journey into this building, but
Yeah.
not a ton of detail about how they decide to get up to these floors.
Yeah.
So I kind of enjoyed the fact that that was the progression they used, and that was interesting to me, but also
That's a cool read. I hadn't now that you say that, I'm picturing them putting their hands on the rocks coming out of the water.
that's exactly what it like felt like to me.
Yeah, that's cool.
And also, they didn't waste time in sort of having them, I guess. I mean, you can imagine them testing different floors and not being able to get into maybe some of the apartments, and that's why they ended up where they did. But they're not going to waste time on that. They're going to get to the heart of the matter,
Yeah,
which,
because they need to talk.
And you know, there was a moment even when they're into this apartment where I'm like, oh, doesn't Michonne know where she is? Did she set this up as a hideaway? But obviously not. And then, but they're in this, honestly, like a weird little time capsule. It has power, it has water, it has a Roomba, it has clothes. It looks like this weird sort of peaceful oasis, though there is dust on everything on like the above surface level. Like, so
Right.
everything on the floor is pristine because of Roomba. But all the other things are covered in dust. And there's things that, you know, we don't often see in The Walking Dead at this point, but things like books and computers and power still working. Like, it really feels like they just stepped into another time, a time.
When they're looking around and they've split up, Michonne's off camera and you just hear a toilet flush.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, was somebody taking a dump? Well, they went, no, that was just Michonne like checking the plumbing there.
I know. I was like, kind of, you know. Oh, so also when they're walking around here, you get the sense that they're on alert because, you know, maybe somebody's still here. It feels like maybe it's still occupied, but they don't know that. And
Yeah.
they're always kind of trying to figure that out. But the bigger elephant in the room here is what's going on between them. And there is an enormous amount of stress and tension between them.
That is a really cool juxtaposition of the stress of being in an unfamiliar environment where things are not the way they expect them to be, as in the floor is clean, and they have so much work to do between the two of them, and they keep bashing their heads together. And I that yeah, that is like a cool element of this, the introduction of this. And so he's mad at her, and she is very, very mad at him. So they have a bunch of arguments. Also, like another element of this story and the dramatic tension is that he's lost his peanut butter and jelly, that button, his magic button that calls the CRM. She still has hers, and so that's their initial issue where she's like not pushing the button. He's like thinking about pushing the button, and to his credit, he doesn't. He doesn't like try to take her button from her, and they end up talking. And she kind of enters the argument also with an amusing sort of meander where she like pulls a book about the one of the Ramona series of children's books off a bookshelf that is
Remote.
improbably there because it's surrounded by coding books. And you're just like, what is that book doing there? And she's
Yeah.
like, oh, I almost was a creative writer and then law and then creative writer again. Oh, and Rick, you've been an interesting writer lately. And she's, I know you're just like, oh.
Oh,
Warning, Rick. She doesn't mean it in a good way. And
no. That was.
she's mad at him for the note that he left on the boat.
Oh gosh, it was a nice little like spicy lead up to
Yeah.
that. She was just like waiting. She was just getting into it. So it was creative writing, art history, something
Art
else
history.
before she dropped out of school, and then she just jumps in on that. But before she even gets to that, there's a whole little thing where she's shucking her clothes, getting into new clothes, and even just her being out of the CRM clothes and in sort of civilian clothes is a different thing. And there's that whole thing where, I mean, Rick is definitely like eyeing her. He sees the scar on her back, which is like giving all this stuff. Like, there's so many things that they don't know about each other anymore. So it's like something that's dramatic. He doesn't even know where that came from, but also he's giving her the eye because they haven't been around each other. Like, there's so much going on here and swirling in the scene. And when she leads into the whole thing about the note, it basically she says everything that I think the audience has been thinking, which is like, how did you think I would actually, did you think I was actually going to like leave with that note and not leave things resolved? Because again, she's like, don't you know me? And the truth is that they don't really know each other at this point any in their lives anymore.
When you think of the time that they had maybe 2 years together,
Long
they had 2 years together between the prison and getting to Alexandria, tops. And now they've been apart for 7+ years. Like,
Yeah.
because that's when, another major, like, head exploding moment is finally she's like, you're going to leave your children. And you can see Rick doing the math. Like, I'm pretty sure I had one child. And then
Oh
they've,
no, that was a great reveal
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
She also probably was just really angry and didn't fully intend to reveal it in that moment, but she did. And then she realizes what, like, she even like kind of rolls her eyes at herself when she realizes what she did, because I don't think she didn't want it to come out that way, I don't think. And so that was an interesting moment between them. But even with that revelation, he's still talking about going back. And
Well,
that
he's broken as hell, and that I think they do a good job of showing just how messed up he is in this episode.
Yeah, definitely. So that is, and their interactions and their exchanges here, it's really like she keeps asking him what's going on. He gives some answers, and he gives some of the answers that we really wanted him to give before. He explains what happened with Jadis, that she was threatening the community, not and every solution that Michonne comes up with, he comes up with a reason why he can't leave.
But
Until
yeah, I guess a little bit.
Well, he does. Like,
His
he.
reasons are just bad. Like, that's all I'm getting at, is like his reasons are just not as compelling as hers. So that's how we can also come to the conclusion that he's not 100% rational.
Right. And but that is actually a really good thing, because not a good thing, but like a good way of setting this all up, because as the episode goes on, they're dealing with this conflict between them, this personal conflict. But they're also dealing with some other things. And every single solution she comes up with, and the whole reason why Jadis does not really want them to be reunited, is that they can do anything together. And she's like, do you believe we can do it? And the answer from his part is probably at this point, because he is broken. And so she's like, well, if it's Jadis, let's kill Jadis. No, we can't, because Jadis has left this evidence be behind. All right, well, we'll go back, we'll get the evidence, and then we'll kill Jadis. And then it's like, no, because there's now this other thing that Okafor left me to do this mission. Thorne's now on the side, so it's just me. And I mean, look, I can actually sort of see a little bit of where he's coming from, because he has seen the power of the CRM. He sees the insanity of the organization. We have never gotten the sense that he fully bought into Okafor's philosophy, but maybe that has become a little bit more defined now for him.
Mostly because he became a mute, like,
Right.
you know, like
We have no idea, right?
that's what Okafor is talking to him about in the helicopter right before he takes the rocket to the chest. He's like, Rick, you barely talk anymore, and it's because Rick has died inside. And we kind of get to that point of the story in this as he's revealing his feelings. But yeah, like, whether or not he was 100% on board with Okafor's plan or with the CRM, we don't really ever get. We're not necessarily gonna get to know that. Maybe he was in a way, because like he says later, he's just like, he's packed it all away. He's been like, that was my old life, this is my new life.
Yeah.
So possibly, but I don't think even Okafor really knows. He's just like, well, he hasn't tried to run away in a year. He just doesn't talk anymore. But I guess he can, you know, he's probably still okay.
Right. But anyway, I mean, they really unpack some of that, but they're still just banging their heads up against the wall, really not connecting as much as they would like to. And you can tell that they want to. And there is still that love, and there is that love there. And I do think that it is a really smart thing that they did. They have now been through very different things, both of them. And so they have to meet each other where they are now, or figure out how to move forward from this point, and can't assume that the other person is there. And she even says it out loud, which is that she had had all these ideas about how this reunion would be, about how finding him would be, and what that story would look like. And now it's not looking like that.
Yep.
And the sort of negative, or like the negative thoughts about what would have happened, that Nat had been trying to sort of like give, sort of like set, not, I don't mean set her up, but basically prepare her
Yeah.
for the fact that he may not be the same person, or he may be gone, or whatever it may be. She's now seeing that he was correct. Although I don't know how it could be other than what they were dealing with, because people change. It's been 8 years. She says, she says their son is 8 years old. That just think about that as like time passage, and what happens to people, and you're not in contact with them, and suddenly you're back. And there
Yeah.
can be those old connections, absolutely.
And he's
But
got so much trauma to manage. And so now she's got a really hard job to do. Like, but before she gets to like accepting that she's got to work on this guy, and before the end of the episode, where they feel like they kind of fast forward through his ability to like shed years, a decade of trauma. There are these nice little catalysts within this episode, like when the sun comes up the next day after the first night that they're there, and they see their helicopter sticking out of the next door building, and they're like, "Oh my God, you actually saved our lives, Michonne." I'm not sure that's true. Like opening the door might have distracted the pilot, so he flew into a building. That's a possible outcome there
Or
too.
maybe they were looking for them and flew into the building.
Yeah,
So,
but
kind of bright.
either way, they are like, oh, we could be dead, and it's certainly when the CRM does show up, they don't look around for survivors or bodies. They don't spend any time doing that. So they're like, Michonne's like, okay, perfect, we can go now. And Rick's irrational response to that is, no, we still got to go back because of Okafor and the mission or whatever. So it's like after he looks at the crashed helicopter and the perfect opportunity to try and escape, and says, "No, no, can't do it." She decides to flee with a stick and a kitchen knife and some bad fitting clothes. Yeah, and then there's the pause in the hallway to see if he's gonna follow you thing, where
Just pauses.
she thinks he's not following, so she keeps going. But we get to see that he actually does do it. He does follow her.
And he does it with, like, the classic Rick faces. So he does, you can tell the pain and the trauma he's going through. And he even, like, starts to go, stops, start, and then he goes and he's like running, full
Full
Rick
Rick run. Full Rick
action,
run.
rhymes action. And so that's kind of a cool thing. And then,
And this is when the Apache shows up too, which starts like the there's a countdown timer to the rest of the episode, because the Apache shows up. This is the helicopter. It looks at the the pilots of the Apache are looking at the crashed helicopter that they were on, shoot some rockets at it, and then bugger off. But this sets off a cascade of, oh, our building is now going to collapse issues, and now there are zombies that have been released from certain spaces, and so Rick and Michonne are put onto familiar territory, which is covering each other's asses and saving each other's lives, which they're still easily able to do. And so this is kind of the glimmer of hope for their relationship. Like they're best in a way when they're doing this kind of stuff for each other.
Yeah, and that's actually the thing that is really, and the thing that I think that they do well. So they're balancing out the emotional conflict when they actually talk to each other versus what kicks in when they are in a survival situation and what actually comes down. Like, it brings it all down to the level of, okay, what's going to matter here? And what matters is that they do really love each other. And there are specific things that have not changed, which is Rick is never going to leave Michonne behind. Michonne,
Yes, that's, yeah.
even though she's pissed at him, they are still in that zone when they are in these survival modes, and that is kind of what helps bring them to a better point at the end
Like,
of the.
that's the faith-affirming moment for Rick, is where she's telling him to leave because she's stuck in a under a chandelier. He's like, "Nope, I'll never leave you behind, not ever, and you never have to say thank you to me." And I think these are statements from Rick that also kind of let Michonne know that she has more work to do and she doesn't have to leave, because they do more work after this. They basically end up running. I mean, they find this dead scientist and a note about how their community failed, and then eventually end up back in the apartment where
Yeah,
they continue therapy.
and that's the interesting thing, because Michonne sort of takes that about the note from the scientist, just about what they were trying to do, how they failed at doing it, and brings that full force back on the CRM and saying, like, look, this is what happens when humans try to meddle, when they try to basically put an order or force things into a like solution that doesn't work for everybody. And, she's a little bit, I mean, like, we don't know enough about the how the CRM works, but I think we know enough to know that killing survivors is probably not a good idea in a world where survivors are low. But, and just bringing that back and rounding that and making Rick kind of like see that, it was kind of an interesting thing. And then they really get into the nitty-gritty about what is going on with him. And again, it's trauma. It's an enormous amount of trauma over years, and talking about exactly the fact that he had no choice but to lose his hand. He was that committed to getting out, and that was the way to get out. And he lost his hand to do it, but then ultimately started to give up because, somebody goes through enough of that and is threatened enough and is sort of put through those kinds of those horrors, and sometimes they just find a way to survive, and it's not going to be it's going to be in the way that he's managed, which is to basically become like a shell or numb, to try to make it so, he can just kind of like mosey along in the world, but it's not necessarily him, and we've seen that. So breaking through and having that breakthrough, and it was really interesting because like them, obviously they have their breakthrough, and then of course they end up knocking boots, which I think everybody probably anticipated for this
I
episode.
feel
And
like the knocking boots happens before the breakthrough, because they basically they sleep together after they get back to
oh,
the apartment.
I guess you're right.
And in doing so, he's like having a panic attack during sex, and she's
He
like
is.
calming him down. Like there's the intimacy is like on the rise again between them, which is a good thing. And you know what? I kind of misspoke earlier when I was like, when they're fighting the zombies, they're on the same page, and they're not. They're like arguing like a married, like a badly married couple. They're like they're bickering. He gets blood on her, and she's mad about it. It's funny, but it's also like, no, they're not okay.
They're not okay in the seamless way that they used to fight together. You're right, but they're still ultimately getting to do what they need to do despite the fact that they each other.
But then
And
after the post-coital, when she's telling him about Roombas and how they're not scary because he's freaking out about the Roomba, this is when they start going through some truth bombs, such as she doesn't know if Judith's okay because she's stopped answering the radio, which is troubling even for me, because I think the last time we saw Judith, she was fine. She was at the Commonwealth, as far as I know, and as far as Michonne knows, she doesn't know about the Commonwealth. I'm a little bit concerned. I hope that we do get to hear from Judith this season. And he also admits that he's forgotten basically what Carl looks like, because he used to dream about him and then they took him away. And those were heartbreaking little scenes. We've seen that dream sequence before, haven't we?
yeah, and this is something they brought back, and so that was definitely revealing, and their revealing that pain to each other was significant. Sorry, I messed up the timing, but what I was going to say is that once all of this is out there, and it's not like this is fully resolved. It's not, because they still have a lot of things to figure out, and it's not like you have this one time sort of reveal and you're better. That's not how that works. It's definitely not linear in sort of recovering from that kind of thing. That takes a lot of work and time, but for purposes of the show, that's what they're doing here. But even his like body language after they have these moments, like I have to say, Andrew Lincoln really plays this so well. Like he even seems a little hunched or like withdrawn in himself up until like the point where I guess they have sex. I guess that kind of helps him maybe open up a little bit. So maybe that's what provided that intimacy, maybe provided the window for him to be able to talk to her about it. But he is definitely like, he hasn't even, I mean, the other part is he's been dreaming about her in this other context. Like he basically built this survival construct to help him get through the horror or the horribleness of his existence.
Until he stopped dreaming about her too, he admits.
Right. And then to have this be a reality that they're actually together is almost super painful, because what if that's taken away too? That risk feels so terrifying to him. And so it was a really, I thought, a really well done episode. I thought that the writing was very good. I thought the storytelling was excellent, and honestly, you can tell, I think, how much Danai Gurira and Andrew Lincoln really like get into these characters, and they definitely have great chemistry together. This is, to me, entirely believable, these interactions, and not in a like a false way. Like they're not making Rick traumatized just for the sake of being traumatized. Like this seems like a realistic place for him to be after all these years.
Totally. I mean, I've been watching a ton of Handmaid's Tale lately, and this has some. I mean, it's a gender swap of the roles in a way, and not, you know, June Osborne and Rick Grimes are not nearly even the same. But these sort the same sort of storytelling is happening here. It's just like in a much more compressed way between a handmaid getting out of Gilead and being reunited with her husband, and Rick being, you know, like taken away from the CRM. This episode ends with the building collapsing and they're driving away in like a cool little hybrid pickup truck and looking happy and satisfied and pleased. And poor Roomba cannot clean the collapsed apartment, which is a very sad moment. But I have to ask you, H.A. Conrad, there's no way that they don't actually have to go back and fix the CRM in
Oh, no,
some
they have
way,
to.
shape, or form. And so a part of me during this like conversation, like these arguments, I'm like, no, Rick kind of is, for the story, just only from a story perspective, there's no way they would have developed the CRM to this level for them to be like, we don't have to worry about that. We're gonna leave. Like that cannot be the outcome.
Yeah, no, there's also a few different truths here. And the truth is that despite all the things that he's been through, despite the fact that he may be using a few things as an excuse to stay, because he knows he's broken, and there's just a little bit of a, I don't want to say a martyrdom, but it kind of feels like that, like, oh no, you go back to the kids, because you know you go and do this because I'm broken, or whatever it might be. But there is an underlying truth here, which is that the CRM is kind of evil and kind of powerful, and that's what Michonne is trying to say. And so the thing we do know about these two is that they don't really do well when they have these kinds of organizations that are, you know, essentially, you know, sort of taking over different the survivors that have managed to like eke out an existence. They, you know, don't always do well against them, but they never really stop fighting. And so in this case, the CRM is so powerful, and Jadis is still out there. And so the thing is that even if she believes that Rick and Michonne are dead, w there is nothing that's going to stop her from going out there and, you know, getting it, basically taking down Alexandria or bringing it in under her power. And so that's the, you know, that's the sort of thing. And I guess I'm wrong. They did sort of succumb to this organizational shift, and that was a bit of the tension between Michonne and Maggie. But you know, like what we know about these two characters is that they're not going to be able to let this go, and they're not going to
Well,
be able to leave the loose end of Jadis out there.
there's not any good precedent for that for sure. But when you think about just the amount of space that's involved between Philadelphia and, you know, Alexandria, which is in Virginia, and then beyond there to West Virginia, I think is where Commonwealth was. There's a lot of space here. And CRM is 17,000 people in their little army. That's not a ton to cover that much ground. I don't know. But yeah, so but I agree with you. The plot does not is not going to let this happen. The plot will see the CRM, Rick and Michonne, get smashed back together. And I'm just curious how it's going to happen. Would Jadis go and try and destroy Alexandria just because, even without any evidence? The peanut butter and jelly, the PB and J, the PRB, whatever it's called. I think there's a shot of it getting destroyed as the building collapses. So there's like zero physical evidence anymore. It would be kind of weird, but Jadis is weird for her to go after Alexandria at this point. But something has to happen.
Weird, and she's obsessed with Rick, and there's a part of her that is not going to believe whatever the heck they come back and tell her. And with them destroying the helicopter, like, we don't know if they before we have no idea what happened before they actually hit the building, the helicopter. So who knows, maybe they did, you know, maybe they radioed back and said, hey, Rick and Michonne just jumped out of this helicopter. We have no idea. But there's going to be something. There is going to be some kind of a reckoning. Something is going to show up. And I mean, we just know everything they've built up at this point. You know, they're not going to let Pollyanna McIntosh just disappear. So there will be a confrontation, and we have to figure it out. But in this case, we now have Rick and Michonne working together. And so, and there is definitely that idea that they're going to have to go and take care of it, even if it means that they may not make it back to their kids. So I think that that's ultimately going to be a part of this choice. So we'll have to see what unfolds. But I really enjoyed this episode. I liked the pacing. I really liked the sort of weird conflict between the calm of that apartment and the conflict between the two characters. and all the different ways that they explored this. Hats off to Danai Gurira for this. I really, really, I think this might have been my favorite episode of this particular season.
We knew we were gonna like this. The whole yeah, the Reading the Riot Act as a whole episode can't help but be fun as long as it's well done. So cool. Yeah, I agree. It was good. I can't wait to see. They have two episodes left for this season. What could they possibly get into? They're obviously gonna just set up like a major show. Well, they're gonna set up another season and a showdown with the CRM, I assume. I assume that's what they're gonna do because they can't possibly tie all this up in two episodes. It doesn't feel possible.
No, I agree. But I'm getting ready to be heartbroken because that's kind of where it feels like they're leading us to, right? The hopeful end of this episode means there's heartbreak coming. That's, I think, all there is to it. So.
Wow. Wow. I leave my heart open, ready to be wounded. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Let us know what you think of the episode. You can email us at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. You can see our other episodes online at reanimated.podbean.com. And I hope that you're enjoying this run of The Ones Who Live as much as we seem to be. So thank you for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening, and ciao.
This episode, as you listen to our outro music, just another reminder, this was produced by Los Angeles-based musician Colin Diaz, with whom I got to play Dungeons & Dragons last week, which was a lot of fun. Thanks, Colin. Also, he's the brother of Kyle Diaz, frequent guest and super fan of Reanimated, the podcast.
I would even say favorite guest.
Thank you for listening, and ciao.